Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel, and I asked him his name. It's a financial company, and I realize this angel's here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans, and it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And we're up!
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now, here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
DeVille is here!
Ooh, this is Wretched Radio. Did I just harmonize with Homer Simpson?
With Homer Simpson.
Yeah, I nailed one. Perfect pitch. I have perfect pitch. When I'm singing along with the radio in the car by myself, don't you too? Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org. Questions, comments, conundrums, snarks. Please note, if you send in a question about a Bible verse, I don't know, say John chapter 7. Please note, I do not use any resources to respond, like say from gotquestions.org. So please send your emails to idea@wretched.org. This is sent in from Gerardo. I'm kind of bothered by a verse in John 7 where Jesus' brothers doubted him. When Jesus said he will not go to the feast, and yet he went afterward, is that considered a lie? You remember the setting, right? John chapter 7, it's clear. Jesus' half-brothers don't believe in him. I have the explanation for that. And you're going to buy this, totally. If you're a younger brother or sister who has an older sibling who excels in one area, sports, academics, arts and crafts, anything, where people, amazing, brilliant, and then you come along. It can cause a little bit of resentment and bitterness. Not that I am personally annoyed with my older brother, smarter than I am. No, sirree. Never gave me an acid gut. No lingering resentment because I had to come along and hear every single teacher go, oh, you're the little brother. And I went, oh, you're going to be disappointed because I am not nearly as bright. No, I'm not bright at all.
See, you should have been a big brother like me. Imagine. Sister showed up and said, oh, good, there's another one.
Imagine being the little brother of Jesus Christ. All joking aside, the comparisons had to be annoying. And if you're a kid, being compared to the Son of God, can you imagine? Did they live with this perfect son? Yeah. But rather than bending the knee, all it did was increase jealousy and bitterness. And they did not believe. Enter John chapter 7. Jesus is on his way, or the people of Israel are on their way to Jerusalem for a festival. I believe it was the Festival of Tabernacles, regardless. And they said, you need to go. You need to be, you need to show yourself there. That's the center. And if you are going to be heralded as this so-called Messiah, I'm paraphrasing, that's where you need to be. Go do your miracles there. Were they earnest? Not a chance. And Jesus said, I'm not going. And then he went. Aha, says the atheist. Please note, I did not run off to gotquestions.org as I read this response to you. When the Jewish Festival of Tabernacles, yep, there it is. Jesus' brothers said to him, leave Galilee and go to Jerusalem so that your disciples may see the works you do. No one wants to become a public figure. Who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. So go, show yourself to the world. And Jesus says, I'm not going because my time has not yet fully come. The Lord then stayed in Galilee for a while, but after his brothers had left for the festival, he went also, not publicly, but in secret. Now, people would say that is clearly a lie. And Jesus, therefore, who says that we should not lie, being a liar himself, cannot be the one that he claimed to be. If you can't believe Jesus on this, how can you believe him on his other claims, like that of deity? They point out, the Bible forbids the sin of lying, Leviticus 19:11. Jesus claimed to be without sin, and that the Messiah would not lie. If Jesus lied to his brothers, aha, and gotcha. Point number one. I did not take this from gotquestions.org. Some old manuscripts of John's Gospel, please note, the nearer they are to the actual event, the more reliable they are. It doesn't mean 100%, but it's more likely that they are. Nevertheless, some early old manuscripts of John's Gospel have the word yet in John chapter 7, verse 8. So wouldn't that just end this? I am not yet going to the festival. The end. So they went, and then he went. Case closed. If yet or now, I'm not going to the festival. Now, I'm going later, basically. If that was a part of the original text, as dozens of translations render it, there's no lie, we're done. However, it doesn't matter whether yet was in that place or not. The context has the same meaning with or without that word in verse 8. His brothers were unbelievers, John 7:5. They were issuing a challenge as other unbelievers were challenging him. Show yourself. Give us a miracle. They were taunting him. See John 10:24, Matthew 12:38, 27 and 40. And even Satan was doing those types of taunts. And that's what his brothers were doing. And so his response was clear. I'm not going to go to the festival with y'all. That's the emphasis. Twice he uses the word not yet in John 7, 6, and 8. Jesus then makes the point to his brothers that God's timing is precise. His actions aren't based on their demand for timing. He was on the Father's timetable, not your commands, not your taunts. I'm on God's clock. I'm on my Father's schedule, not yours. For you, any time will do, he tells them in verse 6. The Messiah will accomplish God's will in God's time. My time has not yet fully come. So just think, I'm going to wildly paraphrase this. The brothers are taunting, hey, go to Jerusalem. Taunt, taunt, taunt. You're so confused. I'm not on your clock. I'm not going to go to Jerusalem with you. That's what it's clearly saying. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to go when you say go. I'm not going to jump when you say jump. Furthermore, Jesus' brothers went to the Feast of Tabernacles, and so did Jesus. And what do we see? We see Jesus engaging with people where? In the temple area and in the marketplace. All his brothers needed to do was go, you all should know, he said he wasn't going to go, and then he came. They knew it. They got it. They didn't think that he was lying. Furthermore, this is one of those instances, and this happens somewhat regularly when people make these accusations. Ask yourself the question, why would John write that? Jesus was being portrayed in the Gospel of John so that people would believe that he's the Son of God. Why would John clearly make him a liar? He wouldn't. It was clear to John, it was clear to Jesus, it was clear to his brothers. He was not lying. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org. And just note, I didn't take that response from gotquestions.org. Wouldn't do that.
No.
This is an email sent from, I crossed out the name, so it must be private. My wife and I got married when I was a non-Christian. Since then, I got saved, but my wife hasn't. That's hard. Before we had children, she didn't mind me giving to the church financially. But now we're parents, she's less willing for me to donate to the church. And I don't feel right about doing so, as it is against her wishes. How does someone in my situation help further the gospel when giving is out? I feel bad about not being able to give, but I don't want to hurt my marriage. Please note, just a note, because you're going to need this, because this is going to be a quiz. My wife and I are otherwise very happy. Okay. Congratulations. You're now the pastor of this man. Hi, Pastor. My wife doesn't want me to give money to the church. She's not saved. What should I do? What would you say? Not being Solomon, your pastor is confronted with all kinds of conundrums like this all day, every single day. And this one has implications. If he answers it wrongly, it upsets. If he answers something wrongly and it upsets the wife, or says, you got to do this, and it upsets the wife, and let's say it causes divorce, can you feel the heaviness, the gravity that the pastor must feel when he's helping somebody work through an issue like this? A reminder, please be praying for your pastor. When we return, you play the pastor. What would be your response to this fellow who is unequally yoked? What would you say? Next on Wretched Radio.
Thank you for being here and listening to Wretched Radio today. We always appreciate when you choose to spend part of your day with us. We are getting oh so close to the release of Road Trip to Truth, our new video series hosted by John Fabares. It was on the road, hence Road Trip to Truth, at college campuses, talking with students about issues they struggle with. The tough issues like, why is there evil in the world? Is Jesus really God? Is there only one way to heaven? Those kind of issues. And sharing the gospel with them. Road Trip to Truth will give you that old fly-on-the-wall vantage point. Not only will you get to watch, but you might get some ideas on how you can share your faith with this younger generation. Road Trip to Truth with John Fabares, coming to a Wretched store near you soon. And thanks to our gospel partners, it's their generosity that make resources like Road Trip to Truth possible. If you are able to join us as a gospel partner, visit wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Perhaps you're thinking to yourself, self, when Friel encourages us to support preborn at preborn.org/wretched by providing as many ultrasounds as possible for women who are experiencing a crisis pregnancy for just $28 per ultrasound, it feels so financial, so cold, so detached. So permit me to personalize my plea.
Hi, my name is Isabella.
Hi, my name is Victoria.
We are 6 years old. Thank you for helping us.
A $28 ultrasound. Two lives saved. This isn't just about $28. This is about real human beings. Mommies see that it's a baby in their tummy. They hear the gospel. Daddy hears the gospel. Babies are saved. Souls are getting saved. Please consider supporting Preborn with as many ultrasounds as you can. Preborn.org/wretched.
We get it. This new normal is, well, not yet normal. So if you're tired of surfing through whatever streaming services you have, then might I suggest checking out The Man Who Split Time. Imagine a man who lived such an extraordinary life that Western civilization changed the entire calendar system to commemorate his birthday. The obvious question would be, who was that man? And what did he do to deserve such an unprecedented honor? Well, that man doesn't have to be imagined. That individual is Jesus Christ. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is the perfect booklet to give to any skeptic or unbeliever who thinks that Jesus was just a mere mortal. Get your copies now at wretched.org/time and start giving them away to anyone and everyone. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is waiting now at wretched.org/time. Here's your invitation to support SOS Ministries. They want to see a God-fearing, gospel-proclaiming church rise up across Uganda and impact the whole of Ugandan society. SOS Ministries hopes to accomplish all of this with community outreach, Legacy Christian Academy, the Ministry of Church Strengthening, and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. So would you consider supporting SOS Ministries? Go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
books of the Bible. 1 Corinthians is a letter from the Apostle Paul to the church in Corinth. Paul addresses his concerns about divisions and immorality in the church. Then Paul answers questions from the Corinthians about marriage, food, worship, gifts, and the resurrection. When you want to understand God's high calling for the church, look to 1 Corinthians.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
A radio professional distracted by nothing. This is Wretched Radio. Look at this tweet that I got. This was kind of funny. Remember that panic you felt when you couldn't find toilet paper? Wait till you can't find a police officer.
Exactly.
That's going to be a real panic. Real panic. That little bad thinking is going to bring into our lives, potentially. Please send your email to idea@wretched.org. If nothing else, from all of the wild things that are happening in our culture, you got to admit, there's some pretty funny memers out there.
There are.
There's some really clever stuff. After all, we do live in an age when slogans tend to win the day, don't they? Please send your slogans to idea@wretched.org. That's my way of saying, if you can keep it as pithy as a slogan, that would be wunderbar. I don't have to edit. I won't misrepresent you, and we'll all be happy. Send your emails to idea@wretched.org, like this one that was sent from Anani Mu, asking about tithing, giving to the church, when his wife isn't a believer and would prefer he didn't. Thought number one, before we actually answer the question, because you were charged with answering the question. You play the pastor. Walk a mile in his pastoral shoes for a moment, and you start to realize, whoa, and this one's really not that big of a deal compared to other issues that walk into your pastor's office. This is a reminder, if you are pondering marrying somebody who is not a believer, you're making a big mistake. I'm not saying they're not a likable person, that they don't have nice attributes, but if you get married to somebody who is not a believer, this will be just the tip of the iceberg of your problems. You are going to have affections for different things. You are going to desire to spend your money and time in different ways. You are going to want to put your eyeballs on one thing, he or she another. You are going to want to raise the kids a certain way, they another. You are asking for nothing but misery for both of you. Don't do it, Beretta. But that isn't this situation. They were both unsaved. Get married, he gets saved, she's not. And she would prefer, even though the marriage is good, it seems to be healthy, I'd rather that you don't spend the money on that, dear. Now, just to help us have a bit of a sympathetic heart, I'd like for you to imagine you get married, you're not a believer, neither is your spouse, you get saved, he or she doesn't, and now he or she wants to spend money on, let's say, the Black Lives Matter movement. Not the slogan, the movement. How would you feel? He or she wants to give to PETA. He or she would like to give to Save the Polar Bears. How would you? You'd be like, I don't want you spending the money that way. You can feel it, can't you? You can understand why an unbeliever wouldn't be excited about you giving money to a church. But does that mean you shouldn't? When we are charged to give from the heart. Now, here is one of those instances where I would suggest to you that we remember that laws are made for man and not vice versa. Are we commanded to give? Yes, we are. From the heart. I do not believe, because this was old covenant tithing for the nation of Israel at that time under that covenant, that amount, which was 22-23%, that it does not apply to us anymore. So it is not a number. It is from the heart that God desires us to give. That's the law. Could there be any circumstances that kept you from giving what you desire to give? And the answer to that is, yeah. I mean, I'd love to give a lot of money to a lot of ministries. You just don't have that much money. So you just can't. There are some restraints. Could it be that an unequally yoked spouse would be one of those restraints? And I think the answer could be at least for a season. maybe always, but I think definitely for a season. And here's what I mean by that. If this fellow walked into my office, I'd start asking some questions. Before I answer your question about whether or not you should be giving when your spouse doesn't want you to, tell me about your active plan to evangelize your wife. I would want to know if this fellow is working on just keeping the peace or if he's desiring to get her saved. Because if he doesn't have that plan, then he needs to start. That would be the first thing that I would say. You need to have a strategy to win your spouse. And here would be one of my recommendations, and this is biblical for a couple of reasons. Number one, it might be the very thing that gets them saved. This is what Peter says to a wife who is unequally yoked. Be an amazing wife. You could win your husband without saying a word because they see your behavior and they are one to the Lord. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't ever have to speak the gospel. It just means that this undergirds your presentation of the gospel by being so amazing that the spouse is like, that's it. I got it. It's clear. It's obvious. Look at how it's changed you. I remember that story. This is a lovely story. It was Tony Evans who shared the story of his dad and mom. Neither one were believers. Dad gets saved, and he's changed, and mom isn't, and mom is not happy. She hates what he is becoming because she's no longer got that partner in sin. Furthermore, he's doing things that outrage her. He's reading the Bible. And so I'm doing this from memory. Every detail might not be right, but you'll get the point. Tony Evans' dad, middle of the night, in the kitchen, reading his Bible. Why? Because he got up in the middle of the night to sneak out of bed to read his Bible because his wife hated that he would read the Bible in front of her, taking time away from her and the kids to read your Bible with your, what they perceive to be your new lover, your love. And suddenly you don't love me. You love Jesus more than you love me. It's like they have their vows were broken. You're now loving God more than me. It's like your spouse is having an affair. That's the feeling that they have. And so he's up middle of the night in the kitchen, and here's the creaking down the stairs. Uh-oh, here she comes. She enters the kitchen. There sits Dad with his Bible in front of him. And she says, I've had it. I have been watching you change now. And every time I push you and goad you, all you do is get sweeter and kinder. And despite my efforts to undermine this new relationship that you have with your God, you persist in it. And you just get nicer and nicer. So I've got to know who that God is. It has to be true. And he leads his wife to the Lord in the kitchen. They get the kids up and start teaching them about Jesus. Do you have a plan? And a plan would be to be an amazing husband. To be so kind and servant-hearted that your spouse is getting evangelized without saying a word. That's the bigger issue to me than tithing. Be working toward that end, because if she gets saved, this issue takes care of itself. I would further suggest, be a super husband and occasionally bring up the subject. Honey, I'm just checking in. I know that you don't believe this, but I do, and I'd like to give some of our money to God, and I understand how you feel about that, so I'm asking you, would you be okay with me doing that now, and if so, how much, and if not, I understand. And just occasionally do that. Ask her. Comfortable for me to be able to do that. You see, this is something that I just feel really passionately about. I know you don't. Is there anything that I can do that would make you more comfortable if I did that? Is there something that I'm not doing that you would prefer that I do? And then, if over a season of time, she is not moving, she's not budging, maybe then you might have to say, honey, I know how you feel about this, but I'm compelled and I must. And I don't want this to be a divider, but I want you to understand why I feel the need to do this. And I would suggest to you that if you have been living the way that I was describing about being a super husband, chances are pretty good it's going to go down a lot better. Even if she's not believing it, you know what? How can she get mad at somebody who's been so wonderful? It's going to be a lot more difficult, and I suspect that will probably take care of the issue. What if she doesn't ever, and you have to go about doing that, and it has a cost to it? It might have a real big cost to it. Jesus promised that that could happen. But I think that you could use some wisdom. You could take a long view, and you could remember that sometimes the laws that are given are made for the flourishing of man, and that the laws, sometimes there can be reasons that we set them aside for a season, like a man rescuing his donkey from a ditch on the Sabbath, so that there can be peace in a home. What would you have said to that fellow? This is Wretched Radio.
If you're like most people, you have a passion to see souls saved, but don't know where to start. Might I suggest Hearts for the Lost? They assist local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They fly out to your church, put on an evangelism seminar, and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
Important dates in Christian history. 1675. German Lutheran minister Philipp Jakob Spener publishes Pia Desideria, which becomes a manifesto for pietism. While both Catholicism and Protestantism define the faith in largely communal and societal terms, pietism emphasized the personal experience of being born again. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The answer is no. This is Wretched Radio. Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org. No.
What's
is the
question?
Answer to this one. Specifically, the question. Todd, shouldn't you ask the question before you give the answer? Ah, technicalities. Isn't Romans 14 actually supporting postmodernism? It is a reasonable question. No. God has a category. It is not derived at from a postmodern mindset which says there is no absolute truth. That's postmodernism boiled down. That truth cannot be known. Therefore, your truth is your truth, and what's valid for you is valid for you because you believe it, and even if it contradicts somebody else, you're both right. That is not what is happening underneath this category known as adiaphora, which is Romans 14, 1 Corinthians 8 through 10. Areas where Christians have disagreement on stuff, where there is actually a right answer, but two different Christians can have a different opinion. And because it's not a sin issue, then two Christians can basically disagree on it. And Paul says, you just leave each other alone. You don't beat each other up over these things. In this instance, it's meat sacrificed to idols. This is something that is not a sin. So please note, if it's a sin issue, that it's no longer in this category known as adiaphoron, gray areas. That's not what Paul has in view. These are liberty issues where somebody actually perceives it is a sin when it's not a sin. So the issue, whatever it happens to be, there's definitely a right or wrong answer, whether it is a sin or not. What Paul has in mind is the individual who sees an activity of another Christian and believes it is a sin, how should they treat one another? That's totally different than postmodernism, which says there's no truth, therefore you agree to disagree, and you're both right. One of the parties actually is. Paul is wanting to deal with the issues of conscience. When my brain tells me something that isn't accurate or right, how do I deal with another brother? How do they deal with me when they're more mature? They know it's okay to eat meat sacrificed to idols. Are they going to eat it in front of me? No, they're going to give it up for the sake of love. Am I, if I see them eating meat, going to think that they're a sinner because they take advantage of a liberty? No, I'm not. We're going to be patient with one another. And this is brilliant. Postmodernism is knuckleheadery squared. This is brilliant because it allows for breathing. It allows for Christians to go through life in different contexts, different settings, different continents, different issues, and get along and work through and figure out these issues, as opposed to having a black and white book on every single issue for every single decision. Just do this, no questions. Think through it, work through it, live through it, mature through it, grow through it, learn through it. And you'll get it figured out and you'll do it lovingly together. It's brilliant. So the answer is no. Send your emails, please, to idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org. This is sent from Bernadette. You don't hear that name a lot, do you, Bernadette? But what about Christians that are still here? Talking about Romans 1. Why is the Lord lifting his hand of grace when we, the remnant, are still here? I'm getting scared of all that is happening. So why does God leave us in a planet that is so filled with sin to lead sinners to Jesus? Furthermore, Ephesians 2:10, he has works prepared for you to step into. He's got stuff that he wants you to do. Furthermore, he wants to fit you for heaven. He wants to fit you for heaven. What does that mean? It's a phrase the Puritans used regularly. There is an understanding, and this would be something that would be helpful for our society today, to remember that God is okay with different people having different levels of authority, different levels of knowledge, different levels of benefits, privileges, if you will. He's okay with that. Why? We see that there are brighter lights in the firmament. A kind of a poetic way of saying that in heaven, there are going to be some people who enjoy heaven more than others. Why? Because they prepared for heaven more. They have spent more time preparing their souls, getting their thinking, their will, and their emotions in alignment with God, having a better understanding than other believers who will still be in heaven and they will still have a light. It just won't be as bright because they haven't been thinking about things of heaven as much, and that these things are temporal and fleeting. And ultimately, I'm going to be spending eternity with the best thing ever, God himself, and an increased longing for that. And that my thinking, even as I live here on this temporal planet with works that he has prepared for me to step into, it's just I'm passing through. And the more your mind becomes in alignment with that ideal, you're getting fitted for heaven. And your light will be brighter. Case in point, and I make this public only because he has, and we haven't talked about it to date, because thankfully it's not that big of a threat. Our beloved brother, Phil Johnson, has cancer. Here's the good news. He's likely to die of old age than from this particular form of prostate cancer. And I know that to be true. First of all, his doctor said so, and he's going to an excellent physician. Furthermore, I know this about my grandfather. I remember just, you know, the C word, oh, cancer. And I remember hearing, because they never told me, I was younger, and that I wasn't told that my grandfather has cancer. And if I recall, he was in his 70s when I found out, and it was chilling. You know that feeling? What? A loved one has cancer? What are we going to do about it? And the answer, my grandfather said it. Doc said, I'm going to die from something else before this kills me. He died at the age of 104 of old age. He had prostate cancer for 30-some years. There is a type, and in different people, it becomes more or less aggressive, that it just lingered with him, and it didn't cause any health issues at all. And that's what Phil has. Hopefully, he dies of old age before he even has to deal with it. And that's what the doctor has said to him. And so, of course, when so many people heard about this, when he announced this, so we're not busting news here, this was a number of weeks ago, and We didn't want to jump in to be newsbreakers on this story because he's living and he's going to live. People poured out prayers. People poured out comments. People poured out advice. People poured out concern. And Phil's response was, it's okay. God is fitting me for heaven. Cancer will do that, won't it? It'll get you thinking with your eyes aimed higher. It will get you thinking about, for instance, who in your family will not be spending eternity with you. And your intensity to evangelize might grow. Your desire to share the gospel with your children or grandchildren is going to increase because suddenly you're confronted with your own mortality and you suddenly understand the prayer, teach us, Lord, to number our days, because your days are suddenly very vividly numbered and you are getting fit for heaven. You're probably going to become more fruit-bearing. You're going to have more love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. You're probably going to get sweeter because you're realizing, wow, okay, so people do annoying things. Yeah, I'm going to be in heaven soon. It's not that annoying. Big deal. Who cares? You get fitted for heaven. That could be why God has you here. And perhaps, just maybe, the day comes when you get the phone call and they call you in for the test results because they don't want to give them to you over the phone, and you're freaking. Remember that God is using this to fit you for heaven, that you might be a brighter light. Suddenly, something that is scary, and I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't be aware of it and prepare and do the correct things to stave it off and to try to live and take advantage of the blessings of medicine, but suddenly you see it differently. Not only am I to not fear, this is another one of those instances when God tells you, don't be afraid of death, don't be afraid of judgment. I got you. You're in my hand. I've walked through death myself. I'm going to take you through it. I know the path. I'm going to get you there. You're safe with me. There's more to it than just don't be scared. There's a positive with it. I can't think of an instance where there isn't a transcendent benefit to being obedient. So when Jesus says, do not be afraid, he's given you the kingdom, there's a transcendent opposite of the obedience that he commands of us. And the positive in this instance of keeping you here and confronting you with your own mortality is to fit you for heaven. So when your day comes, and it is going to come, it's going to happen. In fact, the reality is, it's happening now. You're just not thinking about it. But perhaps we should. And knowing that one day we're all going to get the call up yonder, that we should be thinking in eternal concepts and paradigms and not in temporal ways, so that we can be better fitted for heaven, that we might be a brighter light. This is Wretched Radio. And in the meantime, while we in the West are still experiencing struggles and challenges courtesy of COVID in Eastern Europe, the effects have been even more profound. Nevertheless, Tomorrow Club's continuing their great ministry work in European countries.
Right now, Tomorrow Club leaders are putting together more than 2,000 care packages to deliver to the neediest families in the towns and villages we serve. The packages will provide enough food for a couple of weeks, basic food items like buckwheat, macaroni, rice, canned meat, oil. There's even a package of candies for the kids and, in some places, seeds for the garden. And because most of these packages will be going to unbelieving families, along with the food items, there'll be a simple gospel presentation.
Would you please consider supporting Tomorrow Clubs at this time? Wonderful gospel ministry reaching the poorest of the poor in Eastern Europe. Please learn more. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Holding a newborn, playing with a puppy, eating a chocolate cake fresh out of the oven, becoming a gospel partner. These are some of the best feelings in the world, and you can experience one of them right now. Supporting Wretched means helping spread the gospel, equipping the saints, and strengthening the local church. And every penny you give is carefully and gratefully stewarded. If you are not a Wretched Gospel partner, would you consider becoming one today? Not only will it keep Wretched on the air, but it'll feel better than a hug from your grandma. Well, pretty close anyway. If you are a gospel partner, please know we are eternally grateful for your faithfulness and your generosity. So please, consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Visit wretched.org/donate today. It's that simple. wretched.org/donate to become a gospel partner. wretched.org/donate.
And now a message from our brothers and sisters in China.
If I have 1 minute for American brothers and sisters, I just beg them to pray for the supply of the Bibles, and God will open the door for the Chinese people to hear the love of Christ.
The government of China tightening the screws, doing everything that they can to eradicate Christianity from their communist regime. Our brothers and sisters, they have a prayer. It is not that the persecution would stop. It is that they would receive the word of God. There are a paucity of Bibles in China, and we can change that and provide the word of God for our brothers and sisters who are being persecuted, not just in China, but around the globe. Bible League International, $5 per Bible. Will you answer their prayer? Wretched.org/Bible.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the door. A door serves to provide or prevent access. Thieves and robbers are prevented from entering in, but those who trust in Christ are able to come through him into eternal salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Oh! Should have brought that sermon from Mike Fabares. This is Wretched Radio. Please send your emails to idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org. Recently watching a sermon that was sent to idea@wretched.org. Should have brought it with Mike Fabares. I don't know where he was. It was a little bit windy. It was outdoors. The wind's blowing, and he's preaching about being aliens and strangers in a strange land and how it is that we live, even as the Titanic is sinking. And his emphasis, there were multiple points, but one of them was, and the illustration, it's simple, but it's powerful, and it's biblical. You're on the Titanic, the boat is going down. You see the iceberg, the water is pouring in, the boat is starting to list, the lifeboats are being filled, and there are people that are going to die. What would you say to them? Hey, can I get you some lemonade? Is that table clean? Let me just dust that table off for you. No, that'd be ridiculous. You don't try to make their stay more comfortable. You preach the gospel to them. And so it is in a culture that is sinking. We don't go about the business of rearranging the furniture on the Titanic. We give them the words of eternal life, because those are the words that they need to hear, or they are not just going to die, they are going to perish eternally. And so it is, he was preaching a sermon about how to live in a world that is indeed falling apart. And it was pastoral, it was forceful at times, but basically, as everybody talks, words I don't like, the new normal, but basically start thinking like a Christian in the new normal. Start thinking like Abraham. This is not your home. Aren't you feeling it a little bit more? If you've been wondering, is God doing anything good in a society that's collapsing? How's about he's ripping out your temporary home from underneath you so that you focus more on your eternal home? Isn't that a possibility? Seems like it to me. Tell me that you have not at least a little bit, I don't care what age you are, have said, oh, it'd be nice to be done with this. I can't. No more of the racial divide. No more of the whole COVID controversy. I can't wait to be in heaven with Jesus. He's fitting you for heaven too. He's preparing you to get there, to have your priorities straight as you go, and to remind you, this ain't it. This stuff is fleeting. It's not insignificant, but it's fleeting. Be about the eternal business of your master. Stop rearranging the furniture and focusing on issues that have a temporary effect. when we've got the eternal solution for their damnation problem? Send your emails to idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org. I scratched out the name for pretty obvious reasons. I have a bit of a dilemma. My employer is allowing a platform for some people to speak openly about their feelings and thoughts regarding the recent racial division in the U.S. The group of people is influencing the entire organization, and now as a white person, I'm being asked to take a course titled Introduction to Being an Anti-Racist. So the assumption is, you're racist, come to the course, and we're going to teach you to not be that way. That's offensive. That's just offensive. This is what the posting said. Hey, white folks, F-O-L-X. Hey, white folks, this is your chance to learn the basics of being an anti-racist while minimizing the potential for harm your whiteness has on others as you learn. Now, that probably goes down hard, because there is an accusation that's basically, hey, sinner, you're doing a sin and you've been hurting a lot of people. And we're going to expose that and teach you how to not be that way. That's pretty tough. Join the leader for an event designed specifically for white folks, F-O-L-X, who are struggling with where and how to start their anti-racist journey. The work requires an understanding of how we got here, so please listen to Seeing White podcast series by Seen on Radio and prepared to discuss. FYI, it'll be a discussion time. This person writes, this is upsetting and offensive to me, and I'm not really sure how to respond other than to just remain quiet. What do you think? How do I proceed? Abraham, you're passing through. The country is changing. The comforts that we so often have felt in so many ways, right, wrong, or indifferent, are not there. And they're going to be there less in increasing measures. Can they be there less in increasing measures? You're going to feel less and less comfortable here for different reasons. How do you process it? How do you deal with it? Might I suggest, this will be the simplified answer, be thinking exclusively as a Christian. Exclusively. Not as an American. Not as, by the way, and not as a skin color. On either side of this issue, clearly there's difference of understanding here with racial issues that is going on. Don't think in terms of color. Think exclusively as a Christian. Work through it only with a biblical filter. And so there are going to be more and more things like this, pronouns, where you're uncomfortable. Okay, we're going to teach you now how to use pronouns. We're going to teach you now how to be more sensitive to people who are living in flagrant violation of God's commandments. Think in eternal terms. Look around at these people. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They think that they're progressing because they don't have an eternal perspective. It's certainly not biblical. They want to live a sexual lifestyle that is clearly not biblical. And to see them as lost, you're going to be working increasingly for employers who are going to say to you, you got to do this, you got to act like that, you got to use, you're going to get it. And you're going to have to figure that out as you go. And it depends on the issue. The issue of race is different than transgender issues, than transsexual. It's all going to require difference of concept and topic. But think biblically. This ain't it. Abraham, you're a stranger in a strange land. We so get that, don't we? You know, he came from Ur, and now he's in this land, this what is a promised land, but it's different language, different cultures. You know, Abraham probably had an accent to everybody that surrounded him. He was a stranger. He was an alien, and so are we. And increasingly, I think God is helping us to get that and to make that clear and to be thinking, heaven is my home. There are eternal things that are more important. He's fitting me for that place and encouraging me to do the works that he's prepared for me while I'm here. And those works are clear. that we are to be seeking to bring as many people with us as we possibly can. Idea@wretched.org. Idea@wretched.org. This is sent from Summer. My husband and I watched your program. My question is about saying that we have to forgive ourselves to sins that we do. I don't recall scripture saying this, but maybe I'm wrong. Can you shed some light? Yipper, I can't find that Bible verse either that says we're supposed to forgive ourselves because we don't sin against ourselves, and I don't need to forgive me because I didn't sin against me. I either sinned against you, others, on a horizontal level or vertically with God. Therefore, I seek either their forgiveness or God's. I don't need to seek my own. I don't know where that cliche came from. It is not biblical, and it is not helpful. This is so reeking to me of the self-esteem movement. Hey, let yourself off the hook. Hey, you're on the wrong hook. You're not on your hook. You're on God's hook, and only He can let you off of it. And ain't that better? And doesn't make that make Him greater? After all, if you can forgive you, aren't you benevolent toward yourself? Which we always are. How's about God is benevolent toward somebody who rebels and sins against Him? Now that is a greater forgiveness. That is a greater deal. That is a bigger, more magnanimous act than forgiving myself. I can't find it in the Bible either. And by the way, if you struggle with that, if you don't process that, that could be a connection to why you perhaps don't have much joy and you still feel some guilt and some shame. When God says that He has forgiven you, Colossians 2, all sins, past, present, and future, that's true. It's actually true. Do you realize that you are off of God's hook? Jesus was put on it for you. Do you realize that He's letting you go and granting you His righteousness? If you don't rejoice in that regularly, you're just missing something really good. Would you spend some time thinking about that? If you're lacking joy in any way for any reason, this is the biggest deal on the planet, your sins and being forgiven by God. Whatever issues that you're dealing with, this is the biggie. And if you haven't spent time thinking about the fact that God has granted you forgiveness, spend some time pondering that. You've done more than win the lottery, my friend. You have been reconciled to God. And if that don't make you click your heels, then I'd suggest you spend even more time thinking about it. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.